But that was nice.
Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or you can feel free to email me at bonk@aol.com. So tonight I have a very special, wonderful guest who's joining us again, as he promises and committed himself to doing on a regular basis for the rest of his life. Is that right, Mike? Was it a lifetime contract?
Yeah, but I don't know how long that's going to be. But
well, as long as it is, Mike. And Mike is here from Linked Investigations in Orange County, California. And I know he's always such a popular guest when he's on the show. I get such wonderful feedback from our listeners about how helpful you are as far as giving them really good insight when it comes to, you know, catching their husbands in doing what, you know, they're doing, because certainly for some women, having that concrete proof is all the difference, you know, in the world as far as their whole mental state. We were talking a little bit before the show, Mike, and we had mentioned that sometimes it really doesn't matter legally if you're in a state where that's no fault. Is that correct?
Correct.
That you can't use this information?
Well, it can be very useful with other points, and I can go into that a little bit if you'd like.
I'd like you to.
Yeah, and depending on the level of activity that's going on and whether it crosses the line into illegal behavior, that can definitely affect custody. If the behaviors are behaviors that shouldn't, you know, that are not conducive to the proper environment and upbringing of children, of course that affects it in court. In our state, you know, being that it's a no-fault state, that's just for the reason to get a divorce. So they don't care about that. But, of course, there's a lot of things that could come up in the course of all the proceedings that definitely affect, custody and the money surrounding custody and whether they're going to even have any visitation or monitored visitation. It just goes on and on. But when you find out that, or you suspect that someone is, let's say in the instance that we're talking about for your show, if they're gay and they're engaging in gay behavior, if they're not out about it and they're keeping it secret, which is, I think, most of the situations, that's exactly what's going on. Getting the proof and having irrefutable proof can equate to a very strong negotiating point for you. So if, in other words, if I'm doing my thing and I'm keeping it secret and our marriage has been on the rocks for quite some time and you don't know why, and then you discover that, I'm gay, whether I admit it or not, and you get evidence of that, well, I couldn't tell you how many clients, quite a high number of clients, once they get the evidence, basically they tell their significant other that if they don't give them the divorce and they don't play nice in the sandbox of court, then they're going to use all this information that they've discovered and they have proof of, or their attorney already has it, but they've instructed their attorney not to use it unless they need to. Because once that comes out, it's public information, it's public record. And then, quite frankly, everybody can find out about it. And so their little secret lifestyle, for fear of exposure, sometimes having that proof that they'll never admit to until you have the proof, in most cases, by the way, can be very, very important to have. Something that I've run into lately, which I wanted to bring up on your show, and we've talked about it, is when people are too afraid of the truth. And
right.
I wrote a blog article and I said, you can handle the truth, like the movie. But, you know, I don't know if I've said that before in one of our conversations, but it is so important to know the truth and stop guessing and second-guessing and wondering and vacillating and hand-wringing and not making a decision. It's not that – it's not the end of the world to know the truth. And
right.
You know, so if that means there's some way that you can get it yourself, or if you need to go outside of, you know, the circle and hire someone to help you get that proof, it's just between you and the person that discovered it for you and anyone that you choose to tell. It is private still. It's secret. It's your private business unless you choose to do something with it. But you need to know that. It empowers you. It gives you it emboldens you to know that your convictions were right on. And, you know, regardless of what comes of the, say if it's a surveillance, for instance, or surveillances that uncover things, it might be not as bad as you thought, and it might be just exactly what you thought. It might be a lot worse than you thought, but you can sure deal with something straight ahead, straight on, when you know exactly what that truth is. So I think that people need to be a little more, I don't know what the word would be, assertive or straightforward, and just, you know, don't be afraid of the truth. Get that information, and then you do with it, you know, you can seek professional help if it's with a counselor or an attorney or close friends for moral support. And I think that, well, there's some other issues, and they may come up in our conversation, but I wanted to touch on once again, avoiding confrontations and letting things build to such a level that it could endanger you. You know, we've had cases where the worst has happened, and there was absolutely no need for that. There's just little things you can do in these situations when they turn ugly to keep it cool as possible, and to keep the lights on bright so there's, you know, nowhere for anybody to hide and get away with really bad behavior. You know, a lot of these people are very mean-spirited to their spouses, and the mental abuse, you know, the verbal abuse and physical abuse is sometimes awful, and that goes way beyond the fact of what they're doing. And of course, not everybody does these things, but I'm sure a lot of your people are familiar with that and mm-hmm. have experienced that, and it's very real. And there are things that you can do to avoid a situation escalating and being dangerous. And sometimes we have no idea it's right around the corner. It's right there. If you uh-huh. continue doing some behavior that you're doing to antagonize or push buttons, or, you know, even if you're not, but they are, you know, you can avoid those scenarios and just get the heck out. I mean, there's a great world out there.
You know, it's interesting that I mentioned to you before we got on the show that we had our healing weekend in September, the end of September, and we had 33 women who came in from all over the world, and that included Australia, Canada, England, wonderful, wonderful women, a few from California, and you're in neck of the woods of California in Orange County, and it was just such an empowering weekend because women who never get to talk to other women were now in a whole large group of them. But one of the women who was there recommended a book to me, and I immediately went out and got this book. It's called What Every Woman Should Know About Divorce and Custody. Are you familiar with it at all?
I'm not.
Well, this book is just so intriguing, and it takes a lot to intrigue me because, you know, I don't have a lot of concentration when it comes to most books, but I haven't been able to stop reading this book. It's by Gail Rosenwald Smith, who's a lawyer, a divorce lawyer, and just so happens she's in my neck of the woods here in Philadelphia, and you know, she will be a guest of mine in the future on this radio show. But she is amazing in this book, What Every Woman Should Know About Divorce and Custody, things that I never thought about, things that would never come up in my own mind, but doing a lot of what you're talking about as far as strategizing how to win, and a lot of things that go against you, you know, when you're in court. But here's one of the things she says about private investigators. She says, the days of having a private eye lurk behind peepholes to dig up the dirt on an extramarital affair are history. but detectives can still be useful in contested custody cases when you think you can prove your husband is not acting in your child's best interest. The kinds of behaviors that merit a private investigator are, 1, your spouse is abusing alcohol or drugs when he is with the children, or even when he's not, and if it's impairing his judgment and compromising his parenting skills. If he is drinking or taking illegal drugs and driving the kids, and a detective can prove it, you have a major edge.
Mm-hmm.
He is sleeping with a succession of women when the children are under his roof. And, of course, in our situations, we can adjust that from women to men. He
right.
may be on duty but not paying attention to the kids or spending real time with them. He disciplines them too harshly with physical punishment. The environment is unclean and unhealthy for children. It says, ask your attorney for a reference. Most matrimonial lawyers are regularly with investigators and know who's good and who's not. And, of course, they don't have to go to their lawyers. They can just call you. But I think it's interesting that even in this, you know, in this book, it mentions the importance of having a private investigator, that it can really affect custody. And we do have women who are very disturbed over the fact that, you know, their husbands are now gone to a new life, and a lifestyle that's not necessarily something that they're very comfortable with, but that's not grounds for not having, you know, custody. A is not the issue anymore. It's not allowed in courts. But it's certainly, if it's irresponsible behavior, you know, then I think that that could be an issue. Is that, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I mentioned to you that I've been working on a case this weekend, all day yesterday and all day today. This is the very subject of that investigation. I've been working on it for a couple of weeks now, and had worked on that for a client a little over a year ago, actually, on the same case. But not to go into the obviously details of a current case, but this is something that we do all the time. And, you know, these behaviors that we talk about and how that doesn't necessarily affect custody, like if it's inappropriate behavior, well, it sure is something that drastically affects custody if they're indulging in these behaviors while they've got their visitation or their custody, or if they're leaving the child or children with someone else who's not, you know, most of these situations, the parent will have first right of refusal, the other parent. So if one or the other can't or doesn't want to spend the time that they've been granted by the court that they get, they, before calling someone else or leaving the child or children with someone else, they call the other parent and see if they are available to watch the kid or if they want to have him for that weekend or holiday or whatever the time is. They get the first right of refusal. And this is something that isn't an automatic. It's something that people need to know and their attorneys need to know so they can have that stipulated in their court orders. And it's not that, I mean, it's a good idea. But we find violations of this all the time, and we find violations. So not only leading up to a court case to show that these behaviors are going on, but after the case has already been adjudicated and the orders are there, and if you've got someone that has a history of alcohol violations, DUIs, violent behavior, or just, you know, being intoxicated, whether it's alcohol or drugs, that usually comes up in these cases, and the court will lay down rules. You can't do it during your visitation or 24 hours before. And so if this surfaces in the after the divorce has taken place, and now we're moving forward and there's issues coming up with the kids, they're being left with the grandparents and you're not being given the first right of refusal, or they're being dropped off at friends' houses, or they're in an environment where these things are going on and they're around it, which is even worse. And it's against the court's orders. You know, we come on board and we do surveillance, and we also do criminal records checks to see if there's been other convictions after the divorce that maybe you didn't know about. So, we do that. We document it, and then you file a petition with the court for a modification of visitation and based on our findings. And they just keep hammering away and limiting this. And, you know, most people don't want the other parent to be completely alienated from the children. You know, they see a value in a relationship, provided it's not so toxic and poisonous that it's, you know, it's not, you know, valuable. But they don't want to say, for instance, have a kid completely never able to see their father. They'd like them to have a place in their life. But you have to temper that with a little bit of logic, too. I mean, that sounds good, but maybe it's not healthy. So whatever it is, if there's something going on, you know, that's what the courts are there for, and you always do it by the book. Something else that we've been working on lately is custody issues when a parent does not exercise their rights to custody. It doesn't mean they automatically lose them. So if I'm supposed to have, you know, Johnny every other weekend, but I haven't taken him for 10 months or, you know, a year, and it doesn't mean that I've lost the right to take them. And sometimes parents do that for years. They don't exercise their rights. Now, if they completely are anonymous, then that might have obviously a bigger effect. But so, in other words, they can go AWOL and not see the kids for a long time or not exercise their full visitation, which has an adverse effect on the child. You know, you can imagine what it must feel like if you don't think that your father or your mother is even interested in seeing you, and they'd rather go out and drink or party or travel or do whatever it is, and you're just not important to them. So some parents start to get into a stage where they will refuse those visitations. That's a big mistake. You can't refuse those visitations if they were court ordered, but you can go back to court and explain how the individual hasn't been exercising those rights, and you know the child has become alienated, and you'd like to have that modified so it doesn't upset the apple cart and there's some more stability there. You're almost always going to have one parent who's the stable parent. And I think in your case with your listeners and the people that you talk to, they're probably, I would say almost in every case, they are the stable parent. They're the one that offers that stability. They're the sane one of the group, and that's why they're reaching out to you for help, moral support and legal help. And so there's just a lot of things that PIs can uncover, and working with a good attorney for direction for their case. You know, the attorneys get their arms around these cases, and they need to listen to the client and know exactly what's going on and what their concerns are, as does the private investigator, and everybody needs to communicate well and be on the same page. I've had mixed results with attorneys. We work with phenomenal family law attorneys that get it, and they use our information, and you know they knock the ball out of the park when they're in court. I mean, there's just the other side can't even contest it when they get such evidence that we can bring them. But then we've had some attorneys that don't ever use that information, and they don't really know how to use that information, and they're afraid to fight in court. They're not good litigators. They just like to push the paper and everybody settle for whatever and, you know, go away. And it's hard for clients to separate who the strong attorneys are from the ones that aren't. And, you know, the money that you expend on these with these some of these attorneys is just unbelievable, tens of thousands of dollars easily.
And if
you've got a good case and a good argument, you need good representation. And, you know, I've always kind of gone both ways on the recommendation, whether you want to talk to a PI first or an attorney first, because you don't have to hire either one of them. And quite frankly, it wouldn't hurt to talk to a couple of good PIs and to talk to a couple of good attorneys and make up your own mind and hear what they say. You're probably going to learn a lot, and it doesn't cost anything. I mean, I know a lot of people charge for consultations. A lot of them have to because there's just not enough hours in the day if they don't. But, there's a lot to gain.
It's really interesting that I just wanted to mention that today, you know, what really upsets me is that there's 50 states, and each state has different laws when it comes to any kind of custody and divorce. You know, there's no uniform policy, and every state does have no-fault divorce, but some states also have fault divorce. And,
right.
You know, that, you know, if you have somebody and you catch them with, you know, cheating or whatever the case is, those are grounds for divorce, and they count more in your favor. So I guess each state, you know, like I say, looks at things very differently, and you have to know in your state what kind of state it is, you know, what kind of divorce, you know, that you can go for. And, of course, you know, I'm pushing this upcoming year, starting in January, for your fault divorce or his fault divorce, when the divorce is not your fault and you went into it with good, you know, intentions, and then if it didn't work out because you have a gay husband, why are you responsible for paying for that? I don't get it.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not blaming somebody.
That's like a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming somebody for being gay. They have no choice in that. But the point is, they are. And now they're going to have to, they want to leave the family, and that's fine. But why make your wife pay? Like, I just don't get that. But, you know,
right.
Those are things that I'll be dealing with in the future. But it's really interesting, in this book that I was mentioning to you, What Every Woman Should Know About Divorce and Custody, Gail, who wrote the book, talks about, you know, angles of things that I never really knew about, and I don't know if you deal with this, but as far as how judges see things, that it could be depending on so many different things, like, you know, if both parents are working, who has a more stable household, who has more available time, who has the willingness to work with the other parent versus someone who's not willing at all,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there's so many different factors that she brings up in here and so many good points. But it's really kind of discouraging when I read it because of the fact that a lot of times I feel women are at an economic disadvantage when they're going through divorce because in many cases the men really did hold the purse strings. And when
right.
they're draining you in courts with attorneys, with, you know, fees where attorneys are charging $300 to $500 an hour, you know, and they're just financially bankrupting you so they can have even more control of the situation, that, you know, it's really very, you know, disheartening to see how men can get away with this. So,
well, and they do that a lot from the beginning. With from the starting point, they control the purse strings where there's not even enough money for them to go retain an attorney.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And, you know, let alone to put up a good fight. And that's why a lot of people, you know, they ask for attorney's fees. You know, they want the
mm-hmm.
other side to pay. And that's not unusual.
Now, does that ever happen?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, and well, I don't want to say most, but in many, many cases that we are involved in, you'll have, yeah, like the wife will ask, their attorney will petition the court for the husband to pay all their attorney's fees for the exact reason that you cited. So you made a good point when you talk about how things vary state to state and that you need to know your state laws, but I'll tell you, it gets worse than that. Regardless of the state laws, you're going to have different courts interpret things different. You're going to have different trends in different areas, different cultural biases that totally affect these cases. You know, we've got areas of the U.S. where, you know, they might be 15 or 20 years behind other areas in the U.S. on how they deal with these situations, and so they're going to be adjudicated accordingly. I'll tell you that we recommend our clients when the difference, the way the courts are run in these kind of cases from Los Angeles County in California and Orange County in California, even that's a big difference in divorce cases. And the way that they're handled and in the time that it takes to get through your case and the way these judges generally perceive it. And of course, then every judge is going to be different. I mean, it's kind of like any time you're dealing with the court systems for civil or criminal law cases, you know, the attorneys that are well-connected in their communities that are in the courts all the time, they know these judges and they know how they lean and how hard, whether they're harder on husbands or wives or whether they're harder on for the different reasons that you cited, whether it's if someone's willing to work with someone else or if they're more economically set. Right off the bat, you're going to have some judges are going to have a biased leaning towards one or the other. I've had clients tell me that the judge in their case was recently divorced and is having a miserable go of it and hates women and is being very hard on the female parties in these cases, and so their attorneys are trying to jump out of that courtroom and get a different judge assigned because the judge just doesn't seem like they're really being a very neutral judge. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that can affect it, and just being prepared, and, you know, I tell everybody, you know, be very nice. throughout this. You can have a bulldog attorney. Whenever you have any of your personal dealings, you always come across very professional. Don't ever leave those messages or, you know, whether it's voicemails, texts, or emails that are nasty. Don't do it. I stood there in the courtroom when one party will have a bright red face when everybody gets to hear the dictation recorder of all the voicemails they've been leaving.
And, you know, I'd like to just mention to you, since you're on the subject with this, another thing, you know, from the book, What Every Woman Should Know About Divorce, that Gail mentions, and tell me if you agree with this. Divorced mothers have choices they have to make on a daily basis, whether it's deciding to let their new boyfriend sleep over, leaving the children home alone briefly, or taking a new job that may lead to longer hours. Your main concern must be how it will look to a conservative judge. If you have any doubts, don't do it. Think about what constitutes a fit parent, quote-unquote, and don't do anything that could prove you unfit. During or after the divorce, if you have to ask, should I or shouldn't I, err on the safe side. The judge who hears your case might be old-fashioned, so you may need to give up some things in your life or low-key them if you want to prevail in court. What kind of things? Today, the largest risk factors for women are new partners, heterosexual or lesbian, relocating to another area of the state or part of the country, a job that requires long hours, and allegations by an ex-husband of physical, sexual, or emotional abuse of the children at the hands of you or your lover. Some judges believe mothers belong at home or disapprove of extramarital sex and will rule for the fathers regardless. You may get stuck with one of those jurists. You have to take control of the things you can, your behavior and actions, your boyfriends or new husbands, to get the best outcome possible. To fight against these biases, you must have a lawyer who will be a fierce advocate. Regardless of what charges are flung at you, you are an unfit custodian because you have a boyfriend. You are selfish because you want to move. You are neglecting your children because you work. He or she must go to bat for you and convince the court of what you really are doing and that it's in the best interest of your child to live with you. So what do judges want? Some of the factors that are typically weighed in at a custody decision include the parent's ability to provide stability and continuity for their child, what arrangements the parents have requested, the child's preference, provided he is at least age 12, their parent's lifestyle, their mental and physical fitness, and their history of potential for domestic violence. Other considerations by the court may be the willingness to share the child with their former spouse, the quality of the school near each parent's house, the availability of medical care, the children's ability to adjust to a blended family, the emotional bond between the parent and child, and the age and gender of the child. Courts want to know which parent has been the mainstay in the house, who the child calls in the middle of the night, who listens to her problems, who shuttles her to appointments, after-school activities, and religious training, who helps with homework, attends school functions, and cheers or coaches at sports and social events. The parent who fits this bill and encourages the child's development and well-being will likely be the one the court determines serves the child's best interests. When deciding custody, I look at the motives, says one Midwest judge. Why does the dad want to contest custody? If he is trying to get something back from his wife or ex-wife or use the children as weapons, is his purpose altruistic? But it does say you should worry about losing custody if, one, you suffer from severe depression and mental illness, two, you have a drug, alcohol, or gambling problem, three, you work long hours and your ex-husband has a more flexible schedule, four, you refuse to share the children, five, you badmouth your husband to the kids, six, your boyfriend or new husband has a terrible or inappropriate relationship with your children, or your adolescent child expresses an interest in living with dad. But it does talk throughout this book about how, you know, judges, depending on where you live, really, like you were saying, have cultural biases. And she mentions that in the South, judges are more prone to think that women should automatically have, you know, custody of their children. But in other states, that's not the case at all. So have you found that in your investigations?
Yes. I tell all my clients in these types of cases that generally, the courts here lean towards the mother as being the primary custodial parent. and that's barring any other, you know, barring any negative information. In fact, it's not easy at all to get custody away from a mother. And, you know, we see a lot of people that do have big drug problems and alcohol problems and that work in illegal trades. You know, we have to get evidence of that, you know, to try to get something done, because a lot of the kids are allowed to be in dangerous environments. And we hear those kind of stories, too, where the courts make bad decisions. And in a lot of these divorces, you go to an evaluator, like a 730 evaluation, or, you know, where you go in there and they talk to you both, and or if you're going to a court-appointed counselor, and they give recommendations to the court. And we hear about it all the time, where the party that's generally completely unstable and aggressive and horrible, they come into these evaluations and they're cool as a cucumber. They're able to walk the walk, talk the talk. And they convince that evaluator that they're just a great person. And that gets to the judge, you know. And so people can play that game. And that's yet one more reason why you, rather than just be miserable because they're able to beat the system, that's why you can have an investigation done on them to show, no, they're not doing the things that they said that they're doing on the weekends when my child is with them. They're leaving them with their parent, you know, right after the rendezvous where we do the custody exchange. They're driving right over and they're dropping the child off at their parent's house, and then they're going off, you know, to Vegas for the weekend, and they're lying about it, or they're drinking all the time, or, you know, it's a gross difference. It's not a little difference. It's not nitpicking. You know, we see that too, but I'm talking about the serious thing. And so the passage that you read from the book was great. It was right on. And then right off the bat, the first thing that came to my mind when you were reading it was that it's common sense. But it just kept going on and giving all these examples, and I'm familiar with all of those, and I have seen those many times, and I agreed with all of that. It's enough to make you worry, but you don't really need to be worried. I mean, it is, you know, if you're doing things that are not right, that you're going to have to change your behavior. And if you're in a divorce that's a real contentious situation where you guys are throwing rocks at each other, then you've got to be especially careful, because anything that you do can be used against you. And so these are situations that, you know, you've just got to be very careful. You'll even have people that are otherwise, they're real squared away people, but they might go out to the New Year's Eve party and tie one on and even have somebody driving them home, but that was the night that somebody maybe chose to do surveillance on them to try to say that they're, you know, they've got a severe drinking problem. Now, they probably wouldn't get away with it because you can explain that, but if they get a couple of those kind of occasions, next thing you know, you've got to go get drug tested and alcohol tested, and you might have monitored visitation or something, and that can really take the wind out of your sails when you're given monitored or very limited visitation, or there's got to be, you know, like to have a court-appointed monitor present when you're visiting with your own children, that's a hard pill to swallow. But a lot of times that's a good answer. If someone's really messed up and they need to get help, then that's good. And a lot of times those people are even okay with that. And the courts usually are fairly liberal in that concern, where they want you to go get help, and then you can come back in, and after, you know, a period of weeks or a couple of months, they'll reassess things and see if you're back on the right road, and then they'll let you have a little more of your visitation. But that's kind of going off track a little bit. I mean, what I normally deal with is when people are digging their heels in and they're covering it up. They don't want to get help. Not only do they not want to get help, they want to crush the other person. And, you know, we're trying to help people that really don't have any other way out. They really do need help. And so, you know, you have to get involved in that and, you know, get anything that you can to help their case. And it's not that hard. I mean, you know, you're just diligent, stay on it, and you have a game plan, and they tell you exactly what their concerns are, and then we go out with that ammunition and get that information.
Mike, can you explain a little bit to our listeners about mediation versus going to court and how having a private investigator, does this affect it at all? Can your information be used in the mediation versus court?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When you have a mediator, they do. It's a more streamlined, simplified, faster process. It generally doesn't cost as much money as a protracted, court case does. Of course, you provide the information that you get to the mediator if you're going to go that direction, and of course, the information that we get can still be used in the same way. That's, a lot of people, they'll do that as long as they can, and if it works out for them, fine. If it doesn't work out for them, then they're still going to go the other route, and they're going to go to court and not have a mediator take care of the whole divorce. Generally, when you have a more civil situation and it's not a real ugly situation, then, mediation and a lighter situation is more practical. I mean, there's divorces, as you know, that, two people want to get divorced, it's not that pleasant, but they're gonna get through it, and they don't do any ugly stuff, and they just get divorced, and they both go their separate ways. And that's how it ought to be. And even some of the worst situations can be turned around and made a lot better, and it's the way that you handle it. And you cannot rely on the other person to do the right thing. You have to be prepared for the worst and hope for the best. And just, always take that high road. And it's not hard to do. And, a lot of it's in the preparation and just talking it out. And I think that a mistake that some people, it kind of goes two ways. Sometimes people talk too much, especially before they get the information that they need or before they serve someone with divorce or they discuss details of their divorce and they don't realize that they really just shouldn't talk to certain people about these things. I mean, there are certain people that you can and talk to and get good input from, and then maybe you shouldn't really go there with other people, certain friends or mixed family friends that are both yours and your spouse's friend or business acquaintances and all these kind of things. But I think it's very important for you to have someone, not only an advocate, but someone that you can confide in that does know what's going on, just in case things take a turn for the worst. And I think that all of your records and the files, and especially computer information, and we've talked about getting computer information from people's computers and having that, a lot of that's for financial tracking and see what they're doing and where they're, what's going on. And sometimes people save that in computers, but too many people have what they believe is a nice, safe hiding place at home or in the car or in the trunk or under the mat in the trunk or, somewhere in the drawer at the house. And those are not good places to keep this important documentation that you have, the records of things, and especially personal valuables. If a divorce, it's amazing. You'll have two people that seem to be coming across very sane and everything's okay. And then one day it does a complete 180, once they get served maybe, or once something comes up, or they talk to someone, and that someone gives them a different direction to march in. So say they've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend that gets their ear and tells them what they better do, for instance. And next thing you know, all of your things are gone. And good luck getting them back, even if the court orders it. I mean, you can have $500,000 in rings and watches sitting in your jewelry box or in your home safe, and they're gone. And good luck trying to get them back, even if the court says, yeah, we ordered to give that personal stuff back. And I said, well, it's gone. I pawned it, and it's gone.
Exactly.
I mean,
we see that happen a lot.
Yeah, it happens all the time. And all you – go ahead.
I had a letter just email just come in for you, and it said, please ask Mike if there's any specific spyware he can recommend for either the computer or telephone.
There is not. I don't really support that. I think that, first of all, you've got to be very careful because a lot of times that's breaking the law. And I'm not real versed in maybe an attorney, if they've got an attorney or if they want to roll the dice. And having said that, I know a lot of people still do it. And, you know, personally, I'm not against it. But I don't get involved in that because, you know, if it's not allowed, it's not allowed. But I will tell you that it's not difficult to find. You've got to kind of buyer, you know, exercise caution. It's a little buyer beware. There's a lot of unscrupulous people out there selling things like this and making claims. But I've had clients, one comes to mind in L.A. that had pretty good luck, mixed results with doing searches online for, like, ghost programs, keystroke programs or programs that will and you can do a Google search for that and you'll get results for that. A keystroke program would be one that as you type, it
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some that I recommend to women. Yeah, I highly recommend it when you can't get the proof, only because of the fact that some of these guys are really slick. You know, they're in total denial, I mean to you anyway, mm-hmm. not to themselves because they're out there doing this stuff. And
right.
I've had a number of my women who, this is how they got the proof that they needed. Maybe you can't use it in court, but it's that emotional proof that you need to prove that you're not crazy.
So I agree, and that's why I say I don't have a personal problem with it. I think I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So if you recommend some, that's great. And I'm sorry, I don't really know of any. I do tell people about a tracking device, the GPS thing, which, again, I don't put on. I've taken a few off,
mm-hmm.
and I've gotten the benefit of clients that are using them, but there's a company that...
And what does that prove, using that, like a tracker?
Well, it just shows you where the car is and where it's not, and of course it can't give you specifics like
mm-hmm.
who they met and what they did, but they're very helpful.
Right.
A case I was working on this last week that's been involved, and so the client was able to let us know, okay, why don't you start at this store? That's where the car is right now. And so we go there and find the car, and then we can pick up the surveillance at that point. If you lose your surveillance, then, of course, you can talk to the client, and they can tell you, well, the car is here now, and you go catch up. It can be a supplemental thing in that regard. But
mm-hmm.
better than that, I mean, if I tell you I was over at the library studying for my master's degree all weekend, and you check the record on your GPS, which keeps that historical record, you can see if my car was in the parking lot at the library all weekend, or if
mm-hmm.
my car was, you know, all over creation during the weekend, and I'm lying to you. Those kind of things help, you know, put the puzzle pieces together. They're not going to tell you everything. Now, it might tell you, give you an actual specific address of a house that they were at. That could be very informative, you know, find
mm-hmm.
out who's at that house. But, yeah, they're good. I mean, they can't tell you the interaction between people like a human can see and tell you. You know, I just, Thursday night, this guy's been it's killing him. He's a stay-at-home dad, and his wife's, you know, having an affair, and so we got the proof that he needed for that, for himself and for the family and everything. But it's awful. It's like there's a real dark side to a lot of this. It's not,
uh-oh, you're never getting good news. That's really good news, right?
Yeah,
even the
right.
good news is bad news, so, you know, so
right.
that's how you look at it. But it's also,
right.
you know, the truth hurts, as they always say, but without the truth, you're working in darkness. And I tell women,
well,
I'm sure you tell them the same thing.
The
you can't
yeah,
be afraid
they,
of it.
No.
Because
you
if you don't
know
the truth,
know
right?
What's going on. Mm-hmm.
Right, because when you don't know the truth, you can never deal with your situation. And you never want to have to find out the things that we found out. And nobody wants to have to find out she has a gay husband or a sexually addicted husband or any other sexual that's not heterosexual kind of husband. But the fact remains that it is what it is, and it's never going to change. So you need for yourself to have some closure so that you're able to move on in your life. And, Mike, maybe if we can just spend a little bit of time discussing what women can do on their own, you know, they can't get a PI. What are some of the things that they can do, or what are some of the things they should check?
Well, you know, the signs of Are you talking about to catch someone who's cheating?
Yeah, some signs or some things, whether it's checking this thing or that thing. What should they be looking for?
Well, I think that, it's kind of, it's almost kind of common knowledge when some of the things that you look for, if they change their personal habits, grooming habits, their appearance, if they start going, hitting the gym to try to, improve their looks, and there's really no obvious reason for that you are aware of. It's just something that they're a little removed from the relationship. They start changing their grooming habits and their dress, and they're more interested in their appearance. If they, one that we used to say is if they come home smelling better than they did when they left. unusual hours, they come home later than what they are used to. If there's unexplained absences, if they're more guarded when they're using their cell phone or their, or their emails, or if they have accounts that you weren't aware of, if they've got email accounts that you stumble across, if you find receipts or gifts that you've never received, but you saw it in the trunk of the car or you saw receipts, if you find condoms in their luggage or in their overnight bag, or and you guys don't use condoms, or if you're not even having sex, why do they need a condom? And if you ask people about these things when it comes up, they're not going to tell you the truth. And it's almost not worth even asking them, unless you're not planning on doing anything else. And, of course, a straightforward approach is good in a healthy relationship. But most clients are they come into the game way late. It's been going on for quite some time, and because they rightfully trusted their mate, they would never have thought this way. So it really is painful, and it really is like blindsides them when they find out what's going on. But by the time people are finding out what's going on and they put together this history, it's of these unusual things that have happened, they start to really question, well, geez, maybe this is going on for a lot longer. It usually has been. There's usually been several affairs and lots of things going on. And it's time to go get tested. And, you've got to really be careful. And that, once again, goes back to you cannot keep your head in the sand and ignore it. You need to find out, not be afraid of the truth, no matter how shocking the truth is, because you owe it to yourself to know. Then you can make an informed decision about the direction that you want to go in for yourself. And if there's children involved, it's a lot more important now than just you, because you've got these other people relying on you. So you've got to find out the truth and go. But, I think that schedule changes, if someone's going out, if they've got late business meetings, if they're going out to, absence away from the family or absence away from you, that's a new trend. To me, these are things that would be suspect if there's other signs that are not good. Any one thing on its own may not be. I think something like a condom or condoms or other things that are more obvious, those alone on their own would be a big deal to me. But some of these other things that raise a red flag, when you have a combination of them, it doesn't take, a genius to figure out something's definitely wrong. And unfortunately, asking and asking and pleading and badgering and pestering for the truth and helicoptering over them, that's not going to get you the truth. It's going to make the situation get more hostile and make it worse. And so that's really something that you shouldn't do. And what I was going to touch on a little earlier about avoiding those negative situations, it's good to have somebody else around for times if you're going to be moving out or if someone's going to be moving their stuff out. It's good to have somebody else there with you, not to have a confrontation, but that helps to avoid a confrontation. Most people get real nice when there's someone else around, just like they clean up their act when the police show up. You'll have people real hostile and really making real bold statements and threats that are foundationless. Most of the threats that people make in these divorce situations, you're not going to get anything, you're not going to get the kids, you're never going to see your kids again, you're not going to have any money. I hear these stories all the time, and I have to laugh because it's such a bully position. It's so not true, such an uninformed, ignorant thing to say, but unfortunately, they're usually saying it to someone who's afraid of them or really scared of that happening, And so it does actually work and have an impact. And you just can't take that from these kind of people. And, you know, we deal in that all the time.
These are bullies, and they know how to bully. You know, they've been bullying you for years. And I tell this to women, and I do want to send my love out to my dear friend Ruth over the ocean there, because I know that she's dealt with this too, that, you know, people learn how to bully you, how they know how to make you feel demoralized and that you can't stand up for yourself. And I don't judge any woman. I know what it feels like. But at some point, you have to let your logic rule over your emotions because of the fact that you have been stripped down, you know, your self-confidence has been stripped away. And some of these guys are scary, and they can really make you feel as if they can take control and run away and take your kids. And you know what? It does happen, I guess, sometimes. But overall, it doesn't happen. It's just a form of control. When they feel
right.
they're losing control of the marriage, then they feel like that's all they have left is to try to control the situation by fear. Wouldn't you say that, Mike?
Yeah, I would. And I think that those kind of people need to be dealt with by a strong attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who can be your advocate and stand up for you. You know, most people, you know, that's not their profession and that's not what they're here for. And they've got other things that are more important in their life. And this is a really bad experience. And
mm-hmm.
so it's very important to have good representation from someone who is smart and knows what's going on, that will listen to you and who can represent you. And then you avoid those situations where you're alone with that person from that point moving forward. You don't do that. And you don't stay in the same house. And, you know, they have, if it's a real bad situation, I mean, that's what shelters are for. And they don't release information. And even
uh-huh.
if the person looks for you, you know, there's remedies for that. And like I said, the importance of keeping a log or keeping a history or telling someone or filing a police report every time an incident happens to get
uh-huh.
that history there so you can get a restraining order. And there are things that you can do to prevent people from bullying you. And, you know, there's a lot, even people that don't think they have the stomach for it, I see them turn around all the time, and they tell me how much better they feel, you know, when they found out the truth and they've got their own evidence and they don't have to rely on the liar to continue lying and or to think that they're going to tell them the truth. They have their own proof. They got it on their own, and they're moving forward. And it's best not to discuss that with your adversary. You know, and we've talked about that before. You and I have, Lonnie, about how it's not good to let anybody in on your strategy on the other team.
Right.
You know, when it comes to that.
One of the things that I'm planning to do, this will be in my next newsletter next month, one of our members of our support network is an attorney. I thought she came up with a really excellent idea. And, you know, women are always feeling at odds because they can't find the right attorneys. So I want to start a data bank for women who've had successful attorneys who have worked for them and who get it, you know, that we can use to make referrals to. And
mm-hmm.
I think if you don't have a lawyer that's on that you feel is on your side, I feel as, you know, you feel defeated before you even start. And that's the problem. A lot of the lawyers, you know, are just not into this. They don't understand it. And they won't be the kind of advocate that you need. So, you know, you have to look at divorce as the most life-changing experience in many cases that you're ever going to have. And you have to really prepare for it. And if it's a matter of getting information through a private investigator, getting the right attorney. We had one woman at our meeting who said she found a wonderful attorney through this, I forget the name of it offhand, but I have it written down for, you know, people who specialize in marriages where there are sexual differences. And she said that the lawyer cost her a lot of money, but she won more than she ever anticipated, and it will change her life as far as, you know, what she's able to do financially. Sometimes
Good.
You have to invest in the right things, and even though a private investigator can cost you money, you can really gain so much more in the end, wouldn't you say so?
Yeah. The case I mentioned from last week, we had a few weeks of preparation, you know, on and off when we would talk and make sure we chose our time well. And we got everything they needed in under 4 hours done.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think that's amazing.
It,
once you all planned out and you can do it the right way, right?
Right, and it, you know, it doesn't always work that way, but, you know, quite frankly, I don't want to be out there spinning my wheels, not getting my client what it is that they're hiring me to do. I want to go in there and do a great job, have them tell me that, you know, they really appreciate my efforts, and everybody goes home happy. You know, having a family law attorney, you know, like a certified family law specialist, is some. I mean, I never refer attorneys in our area here that aren't. And there are some good ones that can still represent people in divorce cases, but that's a great place to start. You know, a certified family law specialist, and even some of these attorneys that don't seem to be real compassionate or real into it, it's probably because they've done it so many times, but they're still able to do a phenomenal job. And, you know, they know what needs to be done. And I think that a lot of them, they just get kind of an emotional detachment because it's very difficult. I mean, I still, you know, sometimes I get really incensed at some of the stuff that I have to see and deal with, and I feel so bad for these people. You know, there's only so much that you can do. So it's easy to try to keep a little bit of a distance on some level, but it doesn't mean that you're not committed.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of that out there, too.
You don't have to be attached to your attorney. You just have to win the case and have someone who's competent and willing to go out on that line for you. I mean, I do feel you need
an
advocate.
And they need to know what you need.
Right. You don't have to be personal friends. You just have to have an advocate in your corner and take it from there. But without the right evidence, having even a great attorney may not work. So that's why I feel the work that you do is so valuable. I will mention to women again that Mike is able to do forensic investigations no matter where you live, right, Mike? Doesn't matter where they are, correct?
When you say forensic, you're referring to what specifically?
I'm sorry, forensic accounting, you know, to see where all the money is.
Right. When we can do what I call it is an asset search. I can find bank accounts and trade accounts and property, business records, and all these. We have a basic asset search, and then we have a more involved bank account search. There's also, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with forensic accountants, which is something that we don't do. And that's a specialty where basically you've got an accounting firm that goes in and they completely go through everything to do with businesses or the, you know, estates and everything, and they count, you know, all the pennies and find out where everything's hiding and get all the, you know, all that information. You know, they really get involved, and forensic accountants can get very expensive very quickly. Most divorces don't need a forensic accountant, but some do. It's not unusual where people aren't very forthcoming when it comes to disclosing some of their business interests or investments or other investments can include properties or, trade accounts or other things. So those are things that we can find at my end. But if you need to have a fine-tooth comb going through a business or a company from a forensic accountant standpoint, that would be different. But it doesn't matter that I'm in Orange County, California. I can do what I do and cover the entire United States. And I've got some connections that can check outside of the United States also.
That's wonderful. So, Mike, in wrapping up for tonight, because our hour went so fast, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I do want to let women know that if you go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and if you go to the right-hand side of my page, you're going to see links. And, there you're going to find, if you go right to the bottom, I'm just digging it up now while I'm talking so people know where to find you exactly. On the right-hand side of my website at gayhusbands.com, at the bottom there, you'll see Private Investigator, Linked Investigations, and if you click in there, you'll see Mike's website. And also, what I love about your website, Mike, is that you have such interesting information on your blogs. On the left-hand side, it says Visit Our Blog, and there's popular posts like For Men Only, Three Reasons to Hire a Private Investigator, How Do I Know If My Wife is Having an Affair, Is My Husband Gay? Signs of a Cheating Spouse. Of course, I love that Yeah, because that involves me. But anyway, I love all the articles on here. But
well, thank you. Yeah, we keep Carrie pretty busy. She's my star, but every once in a while I'll try to squeeze out a blog or two, but she's you know her, and she's great. You know, she's a great writer, and we discuss the subjects and sometimes base them on cases and sometimes on news stories, but the subjects, she and I almost feel bad for her. You know, she's the last couple of years, I think she's become a private investigator, whether she likes it or not.
That's good.
She's a great writer, though.
Right, she is a great writer, and she's a great person. I'm so happy that I met her through you. But again, there's so much information on here that you could spend the day reading all this information just through the blogs on the site. And once again, it's called linkedinvestigations.com, or you can, and also Mike's number where you can call him is right on the top there. And also you can just go to gayhusbands.com if you want to check it out. And like I said, you'll find what you're looking for. No way not to, right? Everything
they
is there.
They can always, well, great. And if any questions, anything at all, call and I'll, I've got the time, and if I'm in the middle of something at the moment, I'll be more than happy to take a number or get a call back later. But, I think that communication makes a huge difference. And I think that a lot of times people just need that because you can feel kind of lost. And I'm happy to do it. And that's free. There's no obligation.
You know what, Mike?
When
you get too old to go out and chase after people, you can become a therapist.
Just need a therapist by the time I do that.
Yeah, well, I think you'd be such a great one because you really know how to reach out to people and make them feel better. I always feel better when you're on
the
show. So I'm just letting you know it's, October, November, December, and in January when we start the new year, I'll be expecting you back.
Okay.
I'll be okay, right?
Be my pleasure.
Can I get that commitment now?
You got it.
You'll be back in January?
I'll be back in January. You we'll do our little email thing and firm it up, and there
you
go. I told you I was going to do it from the car tonight if I had to. I wasn't going to stand you up.
I really appreciate it. So, listen, Mike, thank you so much, and to all our listeners, we'll be back here again next week. And I really do appreciate your being on the show, Mike. And next week we'll have our doctor in the house again, Dr. Brian Hooper, who's our end-of-the-month guest. And, Mike, we'll be talking to you right after the new year starts. It'll be a great way to launch our new year. Thank you so
much.
Well,
thank you for having me.
All right, my pleasure. All right, everybody, have a great week and good night. Bye-bye, Mike.
Bye-bye.